Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Domi T. This is John Williams. We are live at the United Center, sitting where Lou Manfredini and Lindsay and company were a few minutes ago. We're in front of Gate 3 at the Training Camp Festival at the United Center. The parking lot has turned into a state fair. I swear to God, when Griffin and I got off the Eisenhower today, we took Damon, we're coming up, getting close to the United Center, and I've not been to this thing before. I didn't know what this was going to be like. There is a line going down
Madison.
I guess Madison. Oh my God, I could not believe how many people were still standing in line to get into this thing. This place is packed inside and out. It's incredible.
Next door, you can buy a cheeseburger, a banana, a granola bar. All you're missing is the elephant here, and you're right. It's a total state fair.
John McDonough, president of the organization, walking away. Hi, Johnny. Stay well. I know you're busy. Keep moving. Good luck this season, my friend. He looks great.
Look at those shoes.
Oh, my God. He does not have Florsheim shiny black leather shoes.
Spats?
He has kind of black and white hip sneakers on. That kills everything I thought I knew about John McDonough. McDonough and his people all wear nice suits, crisp shirts, not too flashy a tie, as expensive a shoe as they can afford.
Nice watch.
Their hair is neatly done. And that's them in the morning. That's them getting out of bed. And then they put on their nice clothes after that. They are a button-down, top-notch organization that happens to put on one of the most exciting shows in America. I swear to God, we come in here, and I had no idea what the crowd was going to be like. We are looking at thousands and thousands of jerseys and sweaters here. Thank goodness that it's not as hot as it could be on a day like today.
The practice is sold out. Capacity, 21,000.
You know, I have something to say about that in just a second, but here's what you still can do if you do come down to the United Center. If you're in the neighborhood and you want to be part of the music and the food and the beverage, they've got coffee and donuts, they've got brats and beer, they've got inflatable jumpy things for the kids. It's all Blackhawk themed. They've got a sales rack here, 65% off some of the souvenir Blackhawk clothing that you may want to wear for the rest of the season. So we're happy to be here at the Training Camp Festival. We'll be here until 12 noon on this, the John Williams Show on WGN Radio. So 20,000 seats sold out for this thing. Did you see how many people were at the Cleveland Indians game last night?
I did not. They finally lost.
Yeah. They had 34,000. The Cubs had more. The Cubs are, of course, storied and sell out, and it's its own thing.
The Cubs just crossed 3 million yesterday, by the way.
Wouldn't you think that if you had the 22-game winning streak on the line, that every seat would be sold on a beautiful night for a baseball game? And you're at home. I don't know how many they're supposed to sell, but they don't sell out those games on the run-up. I was surprised by that. Hats off to the Cleveland Indians, though. Only the 1916 New York Giants have won more baseball games in a row at 26. They won their 22nd in a walk-off in the 10th inning Thursday night, and then last night they lost to the Kansas City Royals.
I've got that audio call. We're going to play it at 10:30, the walk-off winner, the radio call.
Oh, no kidding.
Tommy Hamilton, he goes nuts.
Well, congratulations to them. Hopefully we'll see them down the road and we'll beat them again. But, boy, they are the team to beat right now. Man. By the way, so this is just an observation I have, and we don't need to talk about this a lot, Sam, but I was scrolling around today looking for stories to talk about on the radio, and I just, you know, and maybe stories that are obvious, maybe some that are not. And one of them is Crayola creates controversial new color. CNN.com had the story, Crayola creates controversial new color. And I'm like, oh, no, I had heard a little bit about this. They're getting rid of one of the colors, kind of a yellowish-brownish color, dandelion, they called it, and they were going to replace it with a new blue color. And I'm like, oh, gee, you know, it's so easy to make mistakes these days. What did you call it? What is the controversial new color? And the new color is blutiful. And I don't have a problem with blutiful. It's beautiful, it's blue, it's blutiful. And it's an interesting color. They had scientists at Oregon State University that were working on some electronic gadget, and in the process, they somehow came across, don't ask me how, a new color, a new version of blue that we haven't seen before. And you go, that's different, and Crayola adopted it, this scientifically discovered new color of blue, this new shade, and then they said, let's have a contest to name it. They get 90,000 submissions, 90,000. They whittled it down to four or five, and finally the people, 40% of the people said, let's call it Blutiful. I didn't know that until I clicked through. But I'm thinking, what is the controversial color? Blutiful. Why is that controversial? Because online, some people are saying things like, that's not a word. Now our kids are learning bad English. And really nitpicky, snarky, stupid stuff like that. My point is this, that the new color is not controversial.
No.
And this is what the news media does these days. And I'm not a CNN hater, but I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You took something as safe and happy and non-controversial these days as the new Crayola color. You go online and find some people that don't like it, somebody that tweets about it, and then you make that your news hook. The news hook is, holy cow, these scientists came up with a new shade of blue and people named it, and now you'll see a new one in your cram box. And if that's not good enough for you, then don't do the story. But controversial new color is not right. That's not a story, that's not news, and it's a dumb way to sell it. If their new color was white is right, or engine red, or black colors matter, I don't know. You could think of things they could do.
That's enough examples, I think. We're good. Let's not kid. We're good.
I knew
got the idea.
I was waiting for an orange and a
idea.
Trump joke.
Thank you.
I was going to do that.
That's your shtick, not
make
mine.
Make America orange again.
Right.
If they had done something like that, then I could say, okay, you've got my... That's fair conversation. But Blutiful is not a controversial new color. And the takeaway is this. Therefore, anything is controversial. Therefore, anything can be made or spun to be worse than it really is. And I just think we need to sort of remind ourselves of that as we go forward. When we talk sports or politics or business or whatever we talk about, that we don't always have to go there. That is ridiculous.
I agree. I also learned, fun fact, when I was 4 years old, macaroni and cheese Crayola does not taste like macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, laser lemon. The color laser lemon, that used to be a marker. That gave me...
Seriously?
Yeah. It was like a neon...
Yeah?
I only ate crayons. I didn't move into markers like you freak.
I wasn't eating it. No one was eating it.
Griff, I made a list here of other potentially controversial colors if you'd like me to read them. Okay, we won't.
It's your show. I'm good.
No, you're the producer, and maybe I'll...
Can you give us at least one? I would like one.
I knew when I started that Griff would kind of shrink under the console here, and he sort of did, which was fun. By the way, so we are here until 12 noon. Our interview with Ken Burns comes your way shortly. Just a couple of other shout-outs to not only the staff at the Blackhawks and WGN Radio, but Doug Theobald came by. Doug Theobald and I went to school together. I haven't seen him in 30 years. You know how you don't, because you're 30. But there'll come a point where in your life you'll see somebody and you go, oh, wow, I'm supposed to know that, but I'm not sure what that is. And then he goes, it's Theobald. And I go, oh, my God, of course it is. Now
he said it.
I know. Then I go, oh, my God, yes, of course you are. Well, he already knew that, but I didn't know that, and it was kind of fun to see him. So if you are heading over towards Gate C and Gate 3 at the United Center, you can say hello to us. One other thing I was going to mention, and that is that the Podcast Fest comes your way October 7th. This is a chance for you to, if you're not here watching us sit and yak, you can watch us do the Mincing Rascals podcast, portions of which you'll hear a little after 11 this morning. We're going to do it at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Lincoln Square. That means Steve Bertrand and I and Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie, our usual sort of round table of journalists and commentators, are going to do it at the Old Town School of Folk Music on stage. Nick DiGilio will do his podcast in that series. And also Kelly Leonard brings his show from Second City Works. So the three of us will do half-hour podcasts up there. For 90 minutes, you get to watch and be part of the WGN Radio family of podcasts. If you want to get tickets, it's $25 to watch that. You go to WGNradio.com/events. I hope you come out. It'll be a lot of fun. It's at 7 o'clock at night on October 7th, WGNradio.com/events. Back after this on GN. 1024, Ken Burns talks to us about his Vietnam, 18 hours, 10-part documentary series on PBS. The premieres tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on Channel 11. Also going on this morning, they started at 10 o'clock themselves, the Hart Schaffner Marks semi-annual suit sale. They're sponsors of ours, but Roe and I got a chance to go over to their plant on Tui, where from reams of cloth they manufacture Hart Schaffner Marks suits. There's 450 people working in this place. They cut it, they measure it, they do everything there. It's really a fascinating process to watch a suit go from a big skein of cloth to, or wool to, a beautiful suit. And they sell them at up to 75% off sport coats and suits today at 1680 East Tui in Des Plaines. By the way, we're giving away one of those suits. You can register for that by going to WGNradio.com/contests. WGNradio.com/contests. And then the sale's 10 to 6 tomorrow, too. Congrats to Hart Schaffner Marks. That's a great sale. We'll live blog the Emmys tomorrow night. Sam, are you going to be watching the Emmy Awards?
I don't think so.
You're not a big TV watcher?
I am. I'm just not a big award show guy.
Yeah. They are, as somebody said to me this week, a dime a dozen anymore. But the Emmys, the Oscars, the Grammys, those are still the big ones. I don't know if you put the MTV Awards in there, Griff, for the big awards that we need to care about these days. The what's the MTV Award called?
The VMAs.
The VMAs, yeah.
I believe I'll be live blogging it for WGNRadio.com with a few other people. From the
VMAs
station.
Or the,
the Emmys tomorrow night.
The Emmys. Oh, I am too. I didn't know you were on that.
Yeah. Good communication on our show. yes, I think we'll both be doing that. But you've probably seen more of the shows than I have. To be honest, I'm pretty behind. So.
Well, maybe you could comment on it as a award show broadcast because
I think I could do that.
I think that's half of the fun. Although I am kind of curious to see who wins.
Who's hosting?
Colbert.
Oh!
Yep.
And I hope that he avoids the temptation of, just go do a funny show about TV and don't try and turn it into anything else.
I think you'll probably be disappointed, is my guess.
I will be?
I think so.
Well,
I
his TV show is political, so
yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Are people sitting there going, oh boy, I hope he says X or Y or Z? I'm hoping that he doesn't. You know, though, I'm looking at the list of nominees in the various categories. I'll just give you the drama and comedy real quick.
Yeah.
So for drama, the nominees are Better Call Saul, The Crown, Handmaid's Tale, House of Cards, Stranger Things, This Is Us, Westworld. I thought The Crown was one of the best things I've seen in a long time. I would give it to that. Comedy, Atlanta, Blackish, Master of None, Modern Family, Silicon Valley, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Veep. My favorite of those is Silicon Valley. Any comments on any of those?
Atlanta's my favorite. I'd love to see that win. It won the Golden Globe, which is a big surprise. But the Golden Globes tend to be more surprising. So I doubt that it'll win. But that would be nice. I love Veep, though. And Veep is one of those boring shows. This is what happens at the Emmys, where the same things win over and over.
Yeah.
And it's very boring. But sometimes they're right. And giving it to Julia Louis-Dreyfus every year for
every year she's been nominated, she's won every year.
A lot. She deserves it, so it's like it makes sense, but it does get boring. So,
like when Big Bang Theory won it every year, could you help but not root against it?
Of course.
I never thought that show was that funny anyway.
But Modern Family won a lot over and over too, which is a funny show, but it gets boring.
Text to what's our phone number if you want to text 312-981-7200. Text to 312-981-7200 and tell us what your favorite show is. And I'm interested if you're watching something that isn't nominated. It could be a daytime show for all I care. What's a TV show? It could be Pardon the Interruption. It could be Monday Night Football.
Shameless.
We like us some Shameless.
I love Shameless.
William H. Macy's nominated, too.
He's outstanding.
He is. He is one of the worst people TV has ever created. Would you agree with that?
Frank Gallagher?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, him personally.
Oh.
No, Frank Gallagher. Oh, my God, that character is reprehensible. And yet you do kind of enjoy that family dynamic,
you
don't
feel
you?
Feel bad for a drug addict. It's amazing.
He's more than a drug addict, though. I think if he wasn't a drug addict, he would still be a very bad man.
Deadbeat, drug addict, and abandons the kids.
Unapologetic, just indifferent to other people's harm or suffering. I mean, he's reprehensible. What a great show.
That's my favorite show live right now.
You know what I find myself watching a lot lately and enjoying is American Pickers.
Haven't seen it.
You've never seen an episode of American Pickers?
I may have to start.
It's two guys in a van, and they drive around the country, and they go up to people's garages or warehouses or barns, and they go, what do you got in there? And then they got, like, old Harley Davidsons from 1902 or slot machines from 1937. And then they talk about what it's worth, and they buy it from the guy, and then they sell it at their store in Iowa, and they have a store down south. American Pickers. Great history. I really like the host. And here's why. I know we got a break. We will after this. But what I really like about American Pickers, I don't care about a lot of the things that they're picking, but they are so nice to the people. You're getting a slice of Americana. It's a bunch of old codgers who have garages, I mean barns, full of junk or interesting stuff. And they are living anonymous lives. And then these guys show up with a camera crew, and they talk about that and them. And it's really nice. It's a really nice show. So I'll give them that. American Pickers, I've been enjoying. Text to 312-981-7200. We'll read down your list of shows that are obvious or maybe less so. Don't text in with, I don't know, what's the biggest show of the year? You know, Saturday Night Live got the most nominations. Don't text in with that. I guess you could. Anyway, the news is next. This is WGN.
WGN.
Thank you, Domati. This is John Williams, Griffin Filipich, my producer to my right, Bill Murdoch, the engineer, Marlene Wells, who's always on a remote, is here somewhere. Sam Panionovich is too. Domati, we appreciate you holding down the fort back at the radio station there. But this will be a little bit of a switch now. So while we are all here having fun at the Blackhawks Festival, they're ready to drop the puck at about 20 minutes. So this area is probably going to clear out anyway. I want to play for you a conversation that I had a couple of days ago with Ken Burns. Ken Burns' documentary about the Vietnam War is an 18-hour PBS series that begins airing at 7 p.m. Sunday night on Channel 11 here. And he was talking to me a little bit about the series. And my first question to him was, we all know there was this Vietnam War. What did you try and discover in producing this series?
I think the burning question was the simplest of one. What happened? One of our Marines in the opening of the film says that, but he's echoing our cry to find out. This is a war that is still unfinished business for America, and a lot of people have a lot of certainty and they're in their hardened silos, but new scholarship and new information and newly declassified things and the testimony of people all across the United States of different walks of life and different perspectives, as well as the Vietnamese perspectives, soldiers and civilians, North and South, Viet Cong guerrillas, have helped to change the picture a little bit. And so we went in without a political axe to grind, without a, an agenda, and just wanted to ask that very fundamental question, what happened? And then to create a space where lots of different perspectives could be expressed and could be respected and could be heard.
Yeah, what happened? Presumably by that you mean why? Why did we commit that many lives for that period of time? What's the answer to that question?
Well, I think there are a lot of different answers, and it's very complicated, and it isn't just a why, but what happened. I think too often we abstract the story of Vietnam. We make it just about politics and political arguments and about large issues of government and neglect the bottom-up story of what actually happens. I've made films on the Civil War and the Second World War, and you could list 10 battles, and every American would have heard of those battles, Gettysburg or Shiloh or Antietam in the Civil War, Iwo Jima, Okinawa, and the Battle of the Bulge in World War II, just to name three in each. But, you know, in Vietnam, Americans might know one, and then we feel that there are 30 battles that are central to understanding what happened. And so there's not a specific definitive answer. There's a set of experiences that we feel that in this series we can communicate to you, and we trust our audience to forge their own opinion. And we haven't made this the way we are now all so self-selecting for news. Well, I believe this, so I'm only going to watch this cable news. What's so fortunate about a public broadcasting is that we're in it for everybody.
Well, what's wrong with this explanation? The United States wanted to stop the spread of communism, got itself into a war that they realized they could not win, but no president wanted to be the president who pulled out or lost, and so we kept plowing troops and dollars into it. It wasn't
made about as clear and thoughtful a description as you can get. That's exactly right. And so we run into an asymmetrical war, which our conventional genius and mighty might can't really deal with. And as exactly as you say, the can is just kicked down by several administrations, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, but mostly Johnson and Nixon, because nobody wants to have that label that they lost a war. And what happens is we get a lot of people killed as a result of that, Americans, but also, you know, 58,000 plus Americans, but also hundreds of thousands of South Vietnamese soldiers and millions of Vietnamese.
Excuse me, it's hard to believe that that became the status quo, that people would put up with that.
Well, you know, we didn't in a way. And, you know, Marshall, the chief of staff of the war under FDR, the Second World War, said he thought that people in a democracy could put up with this sort of stuff for about 10 years before they tired. We had a very interesting interview with a North Vietnamese soldier who is sort of now a beloved teacher, like a David McCullough or a Walter Isaacson or an Evan Thomas. And he was just a grunt in the North Vietnamese Army. And he saw the film recently, and he admitted that when he was a young soldier looking at the propaganda that the communists were showing him, he thought that the demonstrations in the United States were a sign of our weakness. But after watching the film, he said, you know, the demonstrations were a sign of your strength. Our government never told us casualty figures. Our government never sent death notices. Our government never admitted a defeat. And what you had was a people that could freely express what they believed, even when they were a minority, and not risk arrest or jail or worse.
You and your co-producer, Lynn Novick, were in Chicago a week ago. I was in the audience, and at one point you asked the crowd, if you served in Vietnam, stand, and many people did. Then you said, if you protested in Vietnam, stand, and even more people did. I was sitting with a couple of guys who had served in Vietnam, and when the second group stood, they were surrounded. What was the point of asking those people
to
all stand?
You know, I sort of feel that we live right now in such a divided moment. And I think a lot of the source of that, the seeds for that, were sown in the Vietnam War. And what I was trying to say, and I do that everywhere I go, is I ask the veterans to stand up, who, of course, their experience is much more fraught and much more extreme than anybody there, and represents, in many cases, the ultimate sacrifice. And then also to ask the people who stood up so that we could stand together and understand our Americanness. The historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr., the late historian, said that we suffer today from too much pluribus and not enough unum. I've been in the business of unum all my life. I don't have, as I said, an axe to grind in this. And so what I'm looking for is to tell stories that remind us of what we share in common, not accentuate our differences.
On YouTube, our listeners can watch about a half-hour documentary of the making of this documentary of the Vietnam War. And in there, I believe it was, maybe it was at your talk, you discussed the use of the word lose versus fail.
Yeah.
I very much appreciated the sort of detail into which you all went over every single fact, every single word.
Every single semicolon, everything. We have fact-checked and triple fact-checked. I'm sure we'll make a mistake.
If you've made a mistake, they will tell you, because that's the history.
That's the kind of world we live in.
Well, they do. They go, aha, well, I saw your baseball thing. And in it was the seventh inning, not the sixth, you dope.
Yes, exactly. And I love that, because nobody's saying, what, 18 and a half hours on baseball? Nobody's going to watch that. They're telling you, lining up to give you a list of what you left out. That's always reassuring to me.
But talk for a minute, Ken Burns, about lose and fail.
It was an ongoing discussion for a long time. There were many other words. I suddenly said, you know what, this isn't losing. The United States didn't lose. We weren't taken over. We weren't assumed. What it represents was failure. And that's what happened. We came in with a set of goals to try to establish an anti-communist government in South Vietnam and protect that government despite its corruption, despite a lot of failings, despite a populace in the countryside that was overwhelmingly supporting the Viet Cong, the insurgency. And in the end, after, you know, many, many years of struggle and great cost of treasure and blood, we left there. And that country collapsed almost immediately. Our plans failed.
two last questions for you. The second of which will be, is there a clip that you particularly want people to see? I'll ask you to answer that in a second. But also, there was this notion then, and the hour of the film that you showed in Chicago, clips from various episodes, talked a little bit about how some of the people who were still supporting the war felt that the war is an extension of the government. It's an extension of the president. We need to support our president. Nixon gave a speech at one point and sort of won more support all over again. Juxtapose that with where we are today and the sort of push and pull between not agreeing with the government and wanting to do something about it, and that includes the president, or supporting the president. What's our obligation?
So this is one of the central questions that emerges from a study of Vietnam. I mean, what Vietnam changed was our basic assumption that the president always had our best interests, were always telling the truth. And what we learned from Pentagon Papers and from other reports, and by their own admission, is that administration after administration, from Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, but particularly Johnson and Nixon, they were saying one thing in public and understood an entirely different thing in private. And the tapes reveal that. And I think we've developed a cynicism about government that has metastasized now. Cynicism is just toxic. It eats away at yourself, and it eats away at our ability to be related to ourselves. There's too much pluribus, not enough.
I
think what we all want is that.
But the spiral we're in right now is that the government is fomenting, I think, cynicism about journalism.
You begin to get sort of craziness taking over and the views of the United States government as this force for evil in the world, when in fact I would defy you across the history of the United States and the history of the world, which is a much longer history, to give me an institution that is better than the United States government. If you start with the Declaration and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Homestead Act and the Land Grant College Act and the Emancipation Proclamation and the National Parks and Child Labor and Social Security and GI Bill and Interstate Highway and Man on the Moon, I mean, you've got a pretty good record of stuff. Do we screw up? Of course we do. Everybody screws up. But I think what's happened in a post-Vietnam environment is that sort of presumption that everything the government does is against us is something that we ought to figure out a way to wean ourselves of, because it's just not true. And what that does, because we are a democracy, it tells us that all of us are not to be trusted, because the government ought to be a reflection of who we are. It's a very complicated dynamic. And I think Vietnam, the war film that we've made, can help sort of expose the way in which that healthy skepticism got replaced by a toxic cynicism.
I know you got to go, but is there a scene you want, a clip you really want people to catch?
I was thinking about that as I was heading towards the dread of this question. You know, there are moments, our Gold Star mother who, you know, let's just be honest, you don't have to sit down and tell the world about the worst thing that ever happened to you again. But she shared her grief. It was a great gift to this production, but more importantly, it's a great gift to anyone else from any war wrestling with that kind of loss. I think about our Marines stuck up in Cantien in I Corps up against the DMZ in the fall of 67, and their testimony is startling in Episode 5. Episode 6 is the Tet Offensive, and it's the most immersive filmmaking I've ever done. That is to say, you feel like you're there. I even brought in the folks from the archives who had generously shared their material with us, CBS, NBC, ABC, and they were just, their jaws were open. They'd never seen their footage put to that sort of use. But even by the end of the film, when reconciliation begins to take, when these veterans that we've met as scrawny 18 and 19-year-olds are suddenly grandpas and a little bit overweight and heading to Vietnam and meeting grandpas that are a little bit overweight who had been firing at them, and the kinds of reconciliations, listening to the tapes. I mean, there's no one thing. I didn't spend 10 years and have a 10-part series to then say, but you only need to watch this moment. Yeah. I think the opening of the film is one of the best bits of filmmaking I've ever been involved in.
Yeah, which of your babies do you like the best? I hope the
exactly.
I hope the president watches this.
That would be good.
It'd be good if you and I watched it too. Ken Burns, thank you, sir. From PBS, his 10-part series on the Vietnam War starts tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. 10:54, this is WGN.
The Emmys are tomorrow night. We'll be live blogging them on WGN Radio. Go to WGNRadio.com tomorrow during the Emmys. Watch the show, but also share along with us, Griff, I think Steve Bertrand, and some others on the staff who watch a lot of TV. We'll be sharing thoughts and observations. We'd love for you to be part of that. I told you to text to 312-981-7200 your favorite TV shows. It doesn't have to be one that's nominated. Sam, you said your favorite show...
that's on right now, Shameless.
Mine, the show I've been enjoying a lot lately, American Pickers. Griffin's personal favorite is... Mad Men.
Mad Men's my favorite show.
I can help you out. And Bill Murdoch, our engineer, said Gilligan's Island. So there's that. What else are people texting, Griff?
Well, a couple of people texted in multiple entries for The Middle, a sitcom in its ninth season.
Don't know that one.
You only had nine seasons to figure out about it. Get on it.
Isn't that amazing? Nine seasons. I don't know. That just says something about the amount of TV out there. Or it says something about me. I don't know.
No, you're right. It's too much. But, yeah, a couple people said that. A couple people said Animal Kingdom. You familiar with that?
Is it Mutual of Omaha's Animal Kingdom?
What?
Okay, then I guess that's a different one.
No, I think it's on TNT. I have to look it up. But it stars Ellen Barkin. It's like a crime family.
Oh, okay. No, I have seen a couple episodes of that. That's okay. But the other Animal Kingdom is...
You probably watched like three seasons of The Middle, too. You just slipped your mind. Oh, I love that show.
I'll stand here while Jim flosses the alligator. And then they would show that. Okay, that's my impersonation of the other one.
Those were our big ones. Some people said Ozark. I know you like that show.
Excellent show.
Goliath. Queen Sugar is one that's been recommended a lot to me. That's on OWN. Oprah's
Network. Yeah. Text to 312-981-7200 to show you want a champion. We'll champion the news. That's next on WGN. Thank you, Doma T. Sam and I will talk a little bit more after the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast here about the games that you should be watching this weekend and who you should be wagering on. He needs to pick five games correctly in the NFL lineup, and he did pretty well last week, one of the better pickers in America. We'll get to that in just a few. It's time for the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. By the way, there is a Chicago Podcast Festival. It takes place Saturday, October 7th. We will be taking the stage at a variety of venues. WGN Radio has the Old Town School of Folk Music in Lincoln Square. What a great venue for us. I'm going to be on the stage. Nick DiGilio will do his podcast from there, and Kelly Leonard will as well. So those three podcasts will be on stage performing, if you will, for you for just $25. You can get your tickets at WGNRadio.com/events. WGNRadio.com/events. So the Mincing Rascals this week features Justin Kaufman from The Download, our talk show host from 7 to 11. Really nice to have Justin in the mix this week. Krista McQuarrie, the editorial writer and member of the board of the Chicago Tribune. She's always terrific on that. And Rob Martier from WGN Radio News. And myself. We talked about a variety of things in the podcast. Here we'll feature just the gang kicking around the dinner that the president had for, among others, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. What an interesting dinner that was. I asked them about the sort of what the president was up to, and then Krista McQuarrie had this to say.
I mean, I think it's sort of his only option right now. It's his way of kind of digging at the Republican majority who have so far been unable to deliver on tax reform, Obamacare. So now he's sort of taking this different tack. To me, it's risky for him. This is really irritating his base that he's even considering some sort of, I don't want to say amnesty, but something along those lines for DACA. So it's great that they're meeting. But again, he's meeting with the minority party and they don't control these two chambers. So there's a lot left to be seen as to what will actually come of these meetings.
What'd you make of it, Rob?
I think this is Donald Trump as the deal maker. I know his base might be aggravated about it, but he ran as a business guy and his ability to make deals, and that's exactly what he's doing. Does he care necessarily about the 800,000 DACA people that fall under that banner? I don't know, but for Donald Trump, he sees this as a means to an end.
Republican voter Chris Voronis was on the show on Monday, and he talked about the debt ceiling deal. It was terrible. He was Republican. He's this terrible deal. This is the idea that the Democrats would come in and say, let's work, and Trump takes the deal in the first pass. says it's terrible for Republicans, it's terrible for voters. So I'm not sure. I think the question is, do Republicans trust Donald Trump? You know, I don't know if Democrats don't have much to lose by trying to work out some sort of deal, because what we've seen in Congress in the last 10 years has been gridlock.
But do you agree with me that he's doing what we all wish politicians would do, put the policy over the party? Let's just pass a version of Dick Durbin's Dream Act. And we're not going to fund the wall, but we will give you better border security, whatever that means.
He's already exhibited an ability, that is, to do more than the previous administration, I think. And I'll probably take a lot of heat for saying this, but he has reached across the aisle. I mean, how many times has he met now with Democratic leaders? How many times has he had them up to the White House? Just in this short period of time in his first term, he's done more than I think the Obama administration
did. Yeah, but there was a lot of obstructionist happening with the Obama administration.
Sorry, don't you think he's a Trojan horse?
I don't know. I mean, again, they even left this meeting disagreeing over what the final agreement was. Was it a deal? Wasn't a deal? You know, I just want to know how much Botox they all got around the table for the meal. It is what we want politicians to do if it's good policy. And I just we don't know yet if this is good policy. But I would agree with you. These are two things that have wide popular support: protecting Dreamers and some sort of border security that doesn't include an actual physical wall.
Right.
It'll also be interesting to see how Democrat voters deal with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who are not very well liked. They're not the leaders of the Democratic Party that voters are like, yay, whatever Chuck Schumer does, we want to follow. So it'd be interesting to see, like, if they come out of it and border security is much more harsh than what Democrats or liberals want, and the wall funding gets involved in this in some way.
Well, I was just going to say one thing is for certain, is that Donald Trump continues to aggravate just about everybody. His base isn't happy, and those who try to score talking points against him aren't happy because he's taking those items off the table as well. So all the way around, Donald Trump is still very consistent and, you know, not liked.
I guarantee you, if he's able to finagle this and make both sides equally angry or happy, his numbers will go up.
Well, one number that is going up, John, and I just checked it last week, is my 401k.
Yeah.
So that has been doing well under Trump. So if that's the least common denominator here, he's scoring big points.
Yes. The economy is improving. We've had a number of jobs reports come out recently. And if we're going to pin that on the president, if the president wears the jacket for the economy, then he does deserve some credit for that.
You think he's getting more credit than he deserves?
No. I mean, I don't think really the mainstream media gives Donald Trump credit for anything. So I don't think he's
getting. What credit
he's
does
getting,
he deserve that he's not getting?
Well, I would just say let's see what happens with this deal. I mean, he's risking his base in a big way. And in some ways, Pelosi and Schumer are too, that they're even sitting down and talking to him and perhaps talking about more border security / wall. That's what you want to see in your politicians, a willingness to take risk and offend your base if it's the right thing to do.
I would say to them, they haven't asked, but my advice to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the Dick Durbins of the world would be, make this deal and make it for policy reasons if it's better for you and America. But then the next time, if the president comes around and says, hey, I did you a favor, now you do me a favor, I wouldn't do that. He's an untrustworthy, uncurious, unintellectual.
Oh, but Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are intellectual stellars.
Are quite
my God,
different
she's like a drunk
that.
Raccoon. Every time you see her, she can't
have
even
a like lifetime of lights. Service in the Congress.
Oh,
and
come
then
on,
Trump, no, really.
These are people who have made a lot of money off of their roles. She gets flown back and forth from San Francisco.
We're talking about that. I'm just talking about his.
They're not
admirable.
Yeah,
they all do that, right? They all do that.
I'm talking about comparing his competence as a politician or a president with theirs. You may not like them or whatever else is bothering you about them, but those are quite different creatures, Donald Trump and those two, aren't they?
But John, what you just said, okay, so Donald Trump has given them something that they want that's near and dear to their hearts. Now all of a sudden you're saying, well, if he comes to you and asks you for a favor, throw up as many roadblocks as you possibly can. You now have just indicted yourself in terms of what Democrats have been railing against Republicans for two terms through Obama, obstructionists. So now what you're doing is you're saying, well,
hold on,
the Democrats have to be the obstructionists now because, you know, maybe Donald Trump might need something down the road.
I just wonder, you know, because you think back, and there was a great Frontline right around the election that did a whole documentary on the battle between the Obama administration, Republicans, and all that went down in the gridlock. And one of the issues was trust. So I wonder how this works out with Trump, where he comes into these meetings, he has these handshake deals with Chuck and Nancy, and he turns around to Twitter and says, I'm not doing anything, Republicans forever, make America great again, these Democrats are wrong. How much that's going to get in the way of actually getting any of these things done, because at some point or another, someone's feelings are going to get hurt.
I guess my point is, Kristen,
And I'm sorry if I cut you off. I didn't mean to
cut me off. I cut people off all the time.
The man lies. I guess that's the problem. So I think we just need to remember.
And I wouldn't
go
closed door meeting with him at all. I mean, to see how he responds when people criticize him, and he goes, well, that's not what you said when we were hanging out playing poker. I mean, he does that all the time. There was an article that just was produced where it showed all through the campaign, and even now, whenever someone crosses Donald Trump, he then goes to Twitter and says, that's not what you told me. What if I told this story? But, so why would you, even if you were Chuck and Nancy, go into any room and have any sort of—
Because they're in the minority. They have absolutely no power in their respective chambers. They are the minority leaders, and this might be their only way to try to— if they're convinced that this is a good policy, which I'm never convinced that they're in this room with him because they think this might help them.
All this stuff is leaked. So whether it's being done directly by the first person or if it's done
it's not a leak, right?
But they all do it though. So, just because Chuck's not saying it directly doesn't mean that the leak's not getting out there and they're not talking about what happened behind closed doors.
And if I were them, I would want a roll call vote on DACA. I would want that for my next campaign to get all you want to put all of those Republicans on the hot seat over something that's very emotional and widely popular to protect these people.
It's the Dream Act. Would you vote on the Dream Act as you understand it?
I support Trump's position that you need to get this out of executive order and into law. So, yes, I think Congress should do something statutorily to protect this population.
I'm going to change subjects slightly. The same time the president clarified his dinner with the Democrats, you know, he said that he's still going to work on the wall and its funding. He lobbed two more tweets at crooked Hillary. She's peddling her book. Does anybody have any trouble with Hillary Clinton selling a book or signing it at high-cost fundraisers or cash rakers for herself?
No, they all do that. Obama's he's going to be a gajillionaire and is already doing
so. George W. Bush became a painter, so.
And not a bad one, actually. His stuff was surprisingly good.
You mean painter, right?
Painter.
So if she gets $2,000, I read your colleague John Cass in the Chicago Tribune. I'm familiar with what conservative media is saying about her making money on this, and they paint it as something unseemly.
My issue with the whole thing is that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are cut from the exact same cloth. Donald Trump won the election, yet he can't seem to let go of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton lost the election, yet she can't seem to let go of Donald Trump.
I think she's been admirably quiet since the election.
She could have been a lot. You're absolutely right. I think she could be a lot worse. She could be every time that Trump
tweets. She's not on Twitter all the time.
She could go after him. I mean, she's done as little as expected of
her book comes out. Of course she's going to sell her book. And by the way, the person getting beaten up for the book is Bernie, not Donald.
The problem I have with the whole thing is more media story. You know, it's a book. And a lot of it we know, and a lot of it is rehashing who to blame for the election. And so at a certain point, I think it's the cable news that's really I have a problem with. Hillary can sell a book, but the idea that that's his headlines, that this is breaking news, that this is developing, come on, man. It's a book.
It's a podcast. That's the Mincing Rascals. I wish you could have seen producer Griffin's hand gestures during part of that broadcast just now. And Bill was chuckling a little bit, too. If you want to hear the full podcast, go to WGNradio.com. Check out the podcast there or subscribe to the Mincing Rascals. And remember, we do it on stage live in October at Podcast Fest. Tickets at WGNradio.com/events. It's 11:23 on WGN. Sam Panionovich will do sports in the news in just a couple of minutes. Sam is also picking football games this season. Each Saturday, we've charged him with giving us five games to care about and who's going to win. He's in this betting thing in Las Vegas, right?
The Westgate Super Contest, yes. 2,700 entries.
What place are you in after 1 week?
We are tied for 135th right
now. That's not bad.
3-1-1 last week.
Which is amazing to me. How many of the pickers, of these really smart people in Vegas that are doing this, the 2,700, how many of them got all five games right?
9.
How is that possible? How is it that it should be 900?
Nope.
9 people... And they got to pick the games they were most confident in, and only 9 people guessed the outcome of 5 games, plus or minus the margin. They had to
the spread.
They had to take that into account.
Only 9.
Okay.
So we are a game and a half, a point and a half behind the leader.
Right.
You get a point for every win and a half point for a push. So we're 3.5 points right now.
Okay, so if we can sweep this week, I think we're back in the mix.
If we sweep this week, we'll be in first place.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay, so give me a game that you're most confident in.
My favorite one this week is Redskins and Rams. Can you believe the Los Angeles Rams are favored? The Rams were awful last year. Overreaction. They beat the Colts last week 46-9.
Oh, yeah.
I am going against the overreaction. You will find this out a lot this season. I go against the grain. The Rams should not be laying points to anybody. We're taking the Redskins plus 3.
Okay, honey. You know, I just want to caution you not to overthink it, dear. All right, so Redskins plus 3. We're taking the Redskins in 3.
Yep.
Redskins. Root for the Redskins. And if the Redskins lose, make sure it's not by more than 3 points, right?
Correct.
Okay. Give me one more for now, and then we'll finish this on the other side of news.
I'm going to save the Bears and Bucks for after the news.
Yeah, yeah.
Minnesota looked really good on Monday
God.
Night.
Oh, my God, yeah. They're playing the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Minnesota looked awesome. Pittsburgh looked terrible. Where do you
Steelers.
Think we're going?
Well, first of all, I like their chances against the Pirates. But if they play the Steelers, that's a completely different ballgame. I'm going to go Minnesota.
I'm going Pittsburgh.
Okay, well, then we're going Minnesota. No, then we're going Pittsburgh.
We're going Pittsburgh. You can do whatever you want. We are laying 5.5 with Pittsburgh at home. I like them to bounce back. They didn't look good in week one. Minnesota looked like world beaters. The public remembers what they last saw. Minnesota in a blowout on Monday night. They're going to have a tough time in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so I should be rooting for Pittsburgh in the game this weekend.
We got 3 more. So we'll get to them later.
And really, how will the Bears do? Also, just talk to me a little bit about this Blackhawks season. We're at their training camp festival. We're broadcasting outside the United Center. Folks are in there just now watching the first scrimmage of the season. We'll talk more about that, too. Coming up after the news on WGN. Thank you, Domiti. It's 11:39. We're at the United Center for the Blackhawks festival. Their first scrimmage is today. And their first game is right around the corner, right? When's their first game?
October 5th. I believe.
Which is just amazing to me. By the way, this is kind of weird. I just got a text message from the Illinois Tollway inviting me to follow them on Facebook. I don't want to follow the Tollway on Facebook. I'm not going to follow the Tollway on Facebook. That's crazy. Okay, that's all I have to say about that. Sam, let's go ahead and finish your sports picks for us. You've got 5 football games we follow each weekend that you pick. You're in a national contest. You're doing very well.
We're in the top 4%.
I appreciate you keep saying we because you're doing all the heavy lifting on this. I know nothing about this. Okay, so you've already told us 2 games. This weekend we should bet on a...
We've got the Redskins plus 3, the Steelers minus 5.5. The Bears might lose by 30 this weekend.
All right, that's the next game you're going to do. Let's go
ahead
and do the Bears.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, the Bears have no wide receivers.
Did you even see the game last weekend? We almost beat the team that lost in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, because Atlanta lost their offensive coordinator, and this new offensive coordinator has no idea what he's doing. They stopped throwing to the best player in football.
How can you not be more enthusiastic about the Bears after that first game?
No wide receivers. Kyle Long still not going to play. Jordan Howard, the Bears running back, probably out. And it's still Mike Glennon. Do you know where Mike Glennon came from?
America? No.
I thought you were going to say his mother. He came from Tampa Bay, where Dirk Cotter, the head coach, knows everything he can do. He knows his multiple weaknesses.
Hey, I got a question for you. That little teeny running back we got, Cohen?
Tariq Cohen, he's going to start likely.
He had a great game. How is it that in the last series they didn't ask him to do anything?
John Fox claimed that they needed pass protectors out there.
I know he's a little guy, but maybe they could give him the ball or have him run down the field and throw the dang thing to him. Maybe he could catch it.
He should have been out there. I'm with you.
All right. Okay, so Bears are going to lose. Big time.
Big time. Yeah,
right.
We're taking Tampa minus 7.
All right.
We also like Aaron Rodgers getting plus 3. Sunday Night Football, anytime you get the Packers plus points, it's a good spot.
I don't know what that means. So which team, who's the Packers
playing? Green Bay's playing Atlanta.
All right, and we're going to pick?
Green Bay.
Take Green Bay.
Plus the 3.
Got it.
And then we also have the Seahawks winning big, Seattle minus 14 against the lowly San Francisco 49ers.
All right, so we're betting for Seattle then as well.
Yep.
All right, we'll check in on that Monday and see how your picks did and where you stand in this national ranking. And by you, I mean us.
5-0 and we're in first, John. You know that.
I'm so rooting for us on this. All right, Scott King is also here. WGN Blackhawks beat writer. You'll read his stuff on our website and also listen to his podcast with Mike Jacobson, Blackhawks Crazy. You were on with Lou a little while ago. Scott, thanks for jumping in here with us for just a couple of minutes.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
What's the biggest key for this team this year?
Yeah, a lot of huge moves in the offseason. You know, you lose guys like Marian Hossa and Nicholas Hjalmarsson, and you get some guys back, and Connor Murphy, and a backup goaltender, Anton Forsberg. The guys don't know what to expect. You know, coming back, Brandon Saad's going to be great on that top line with Jonathan Toews. So for me, I like their offense overall, John. I think defense is a question mark with some new faces, and guys like Michael Kempney, who played a small role last year, is going to have to step up.
Connor Murphy's going to be in a top pair probably with Duncan Keith. He'll have to play his best. But the biggest question mark, I think, is going to be the backup goaltending. Anton Forsberg only has 10 games NHL experience, and Corey Crawford's used to getting a lot of rest, having guys like Antti Raanta and Scott Darling backing up who could win a bunch of games when he's not in net. So I think that's going to play a big role in the Hawks' record and playoff chances.
So I'm not exactly sure how hockey works. You have lines, right?
Yes, sir.
So it'd be like Taves with Saad and Panic, and
yep,
that's the front line. They all go out together.
The top.
And then they get tired, and then Patrick Kane's group will come out. And then will there be a third line that replaces the second line every time?
There's up to four lines.
Yeah, but does the fourth line get to play as much as the first two?
No. You don't get a lot of minutes, especially under Joel Quenneville.
How is that determined? Like, because the game is going so fast, how does a line know that it's their turn to run right out there?
Well, there's also special teams. There's also penalty kills and power plays.
Stop confusing me. So how does, do you know what I mean? I mean, it seems like guys are just coming and going so fast.
Well, I played in a rec league a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So not only do I know from studying the team, I know from experience.
Right.
And it is very tiring. They recommend you
45 seconds, right?
Exactly, yeah. Somewhere in between 30 and a full minute. And just your skill guys, your Jonathan Taves, your Patrick Kanes, they're going to be out there longer. And then your third lines, your fourth lines – third line's going to give you a little energy, going to be a little feisty.
But is
your
the coach on the bench going, all right, so the second line's out there. Maybe we're halfway through the first period. Does the coach Quenneville then say, okay, third line, you guys get ready. You're about to go in.
Depends what's going on. If you're, you know, if there's a minute left and you're down one goal, you might want Patrick Kane to stay out there a little longer.
But do they sometimes break the lines apart and keep Kane out there even though his line is resting? Or
yeah, definitely. Definitely.
They
you can see,
well,
you'll see with Coach Q, you'll see a lot of mix and matching. People refer to it as his line blender. He'll throw, if he doesn't like the way one guy's playing on the line, he'll throw another guy out there to see if he gives better chemistry and balance with the whole line.
Would you say that Chicago is spoiled? We have two kinds of Blackhawks teams, the ones that win the Stanley Cup and the ones that don't. That's what we have now. And so if they don't win or at least play in the finals, then we're disappointed with the season, right?
I think, yeah, I think the fans here are very spoiled with the success the team's had. But also with that, it's a realistic expectation that they should have a deep run every year. You still have core guys who are going to be Hall of Famers. I know you lost a couple that I mentioned earlier, but there's still a great core here, and they might have brought in the right guys. We're going to see this season.
So does a coach get how much credit does the coach get? Because, like, I don't know, in the NFL, they're calling plays. If the Bears lose, then we'll say, well, the coach, they didn't have a good game plan. Is that true for hockey as well, or is it more just guys skate?
No, the head coach plays a huge role in hockey. You can credit Joel Quenneville with a lot of the success
the
team's had.
But they don't run plays. They don't say, okay, you give
it. But
he's
going to match those. He's going to mix and match those lines. He's going to see, okay, who feeds Patrick Kane the puck the best? Who plays really well defensively that I can throw on a third or fourth line? He's getting the best out of the team in each line, in each defensive pairing. So when you have a lot of talent, it's hard to mix and match who plays the best with who.
Well, we got this little guy, right? Like a 5'8" player this year?
Prospect?
Yeah. What's his name?
Alex DeBrincat.
Right. Is he going to make the team? And can you play if you're that? I know that Jonathan Taves isn't massive either, but I mean, or Kane sure isn't. But how small can you be and still play in the NHL?
There's still guys who are small but have a good awareness, have a good nose for the puck and how to avoid getting hit and still know where plays are going to be, the anticipation of making a play. And Joel Quenneville talked about him yesterday. He seemed to think that he will. I don't know if it's this year. I think he'll get a chance by midseason. But Joel Quenneville thinks that his size is not going to be an issue. He will be a Hawk eventually.
Our offense is going to be good enough. The question is our defense going to be good enough?
I think there's a lot of question marks with the defense with new guys coming in. Yeah.
So what does that mean for scores then? We might see some 5-4s as opposed to 2-1s?
Sure, there could be some growing pains early on. But if you're, you know, look, the D gets the puck to the forwards, and those guys score. And this team right now, the way they're built, they have great forwards. They do have guys who can score. They have guys who can play tough. After your Saad, Taves, Panic, and your Kane line's been out there, they have a third and fourth line. They could also wear guys down and play good defensively. So it does come down to the defense for me.
Where do you think Taves and Kane are in the arcs of their careers?
I think Kane has gotten better each year, you know, especially the last few years. Since the year he won the Hart Trophy in 2016, he's just gotten better, and that was the start of him getting to another level. I think Jonathan Taves has had two subpar seasons, and he said that, and he said he worked harder this offseason to get back to where he was. So that's one of the main reasons you see them bring back Brandon Saad, because those guys played so well together. So I think Taves needs a bounce back season for himself, but also for the team.
Where can we read you online?
WGNRadio.com. Chelsea Blogger is our beat writing Hawks blog.
WGNRadio.com.
Yes, sir.
Chelsea Blogger.
Yes.
Nice to meet you in person.
I've
heard your voice once in a while, the podcast. I know you write for us. It's nice for you to come out here. And let's talk again during the season.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Griffin's got a few things for us on the Vibe Score segment. We always close the show with that on Saturdays. That's right around the corner on WGN. All right, we normally start with a song, but to make the engineering of all of this easier, we're at the United Center in the parking lot for the Blackhawks Festival. We'll just start with the Vibe Score theme music. Griffin, before you start to run some things down for our consideration, Sam, one of the security people, who's a very nice guy, I guess I shouldn't mention his name, he said he's not supposed to be on the radio. He's got the Bears winning 24-17 tomorrow. 24-17.
He's wrong.
Thank you, Sam. All right, Griff, what have you got for us?
All right, well, so we're just going to skip music altogether. We'll start in food instead. I was reading in Eater.com about a veggie burger that...
17. I don't like veggie burgers.
It's a bleeding veggie burger. So it bleeds beet juice. So as to simulate the experience of eating a real burger. You kind of like that idea. I thought you'd be disgusted.
It's disgusting, but I don't know. So is the juice of a red, juicy burger. That's blood, you know.
That's true. Well, I don't even know if that's true. But they said since rolling it out last year at Whole Foods.
The juice of a beef burger is blood.
Okay.
Estimated probability of accuracy on that, 85%.
Yeah, I just think it might be a little more complicated. But yeah, but essentially.
Since we're talking about bloody burgers, I have a question real quick. Can you let me know? I may be on my way to Minnesota relatively soon.
Yeah.
Which one is the best Juicy Lucy?
Neither. Okay.
Really?
Yes. Do not go there. Go to a place called Red Cow.
Red Cow.
Red Cow. Get the Manhattan Burger. It is the best hamburger I've ever had in my life. Red Cow Manhattan Burger.
Okay.
My accountant lives in LaGrange, a man named Warren Winkler. He drove up there to see us. We took him over there. He almost cried. He had tears in his eyes. And he's not a man moved to emotions.
Sam, I think Matt's Bar is the way to go, but you'll have to wait a long time.
You will.
Veggie burgers, guys. Come on, focus.
Okay, veggie burgers. Bleeding veggie burgers.
They rolled out last year at a Whole Foods in Colorado where it sold out in 1 hour.
Yeah.
It's the Beyond Burger. And it's steadily expanded its footprint. They want to be in like 1,000 restaurants by the end of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you interested in trying that?
1 to 100. 0, I don't want to try it. 100, I absolutely will order it.
Yeah.
74, final answer.
Okay.
Sam?
That's
a huge shift swing for me.
5.
How about you?
I also like a 75. I'm interested. I don't know how much I'll like it. This is not a prediction of how much I'll like it, but I want to try it.
You're going to give it a try now. Domati, are you listening back at WGN Radio downtown?
It's Kessler back here.
Hey, Kessler.
Hey, Bobby.
I have no interest in eating a fake blood burger because if you're going to go vegetarian, why try to make it? You know, it never really measures up to the real thing. And I'm vegetarian 90% of the time.
Well, vegetarians aren't interested in bloody sandwiches anyway.
So why? I just don't eat them that much.
Oh. Well, then pardon me.
Yeah, Bob doesn't eat much meat. But aren't you... I mean, it's never been close to the real thing in years past. But technology is bringing us so far,
technology.
Bob.
Technology.
Come on.
No, you mentioned
give us another one.
All right. In sports, the John Lackey strike call yesterday was 2-2 count. Carlos Martinez, top of the fifth inning. Lackey threw a breaking pitch.
That was
pretty much
strike.
right over the plate. He's called a ball. The inning goes on. He gives up a couple more hits. He's super mad. Gets tossed out. Contreras gets tossed out, too. I want you to score his reaction. Was it reasonable to react the way he did to that call?
Okay, should we let Sam go first? Because it's kind of in his wheelhouse.
Yes.
Reasonable?
I'm
going
to say whatever he said.
Look, he's right. It was a strike.
Yeah.
But in a pennant race, can you afford to get tossed in the fifth inning arguing balls and strikes? Probably not. I'm going to say bad decision. But they ended up winning the game, so probably 65, bad.
It's a little easier to score now knowing that they win. You could be like, get fired up, do
not
whatever you want.
Not only did they win the game, but
if they lose.
This team is sort of maybe needed a little spark at the end of the second half here. So maybe it was one of those things where the coach sometimes intentionally gets tossed. Maybe Lackey goes, I don't have 3 more innings in me anyway. I'll get tossed now.
I don't think, but you saw the video. I don't think that's what it was.
He got tossed. He knew he was getting tossed.
He got tossed in the middle of the play.
Yeah. Once that ball landed in the outfield, he knew. In fact, he got tossed pretty much on the way to back up the play.
So what would have happened if he had made a backup play? He is now a dead player. Is he eligible to touch the ball after he's already been tossed out of the game?
Well, he got tossed once it was over, but he started jawing during the play. I don't think they tossed him mid-play.
In your scenario, the umpire takes a moment out of watching the play to throw him out of the game, which
I believe he was excluded from the game during that play. It would be like a guy coming off the bench.
No, Sam said,
"Hey, can I help out?"
Yeah, but Sam's saying that he didn't get thrown out till the end of the play.
Oh,
correct. Your scenario is a lot more fun, though.
Yeah, I think my scenario is correct. Also, anyway, I'm giving his reaction an 80. I think it was awesome.
Oh, you like it? Okay.
Yeah,
that's fair.
One more, Griff.
We'll go to TV. We'll go to movies. It is in theaters.
Yes.
It made a ton of money. I don't know if you saw it.
Who knew a clown movie would be that exciting again?
Yeah. Sam, did you see any interest?
No, and I will not.
No, you're scared of clowns?
Yes.
Well, that took a lot.
Especially clowns that want to kill me? Yes, I'll pass.
I watched the original made-for-TV movie. Yeah. I watched about half hour, 45 minutes of that the other day.
Yeah.
I enjoyed myself, but it wasn't scaring me the way I thought it would.
Well, did the trailers look super scary to you, or the new one?
The new one did scare me, and I was able to catch the
You
new
did
one.
Go see it?
Yeah. It scared me. I didn't love it like some people do.
What are we scoring
the movie It.
Okay, yeah.
I'm giving my score.
I'll give you mine.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the trailers. It's not that good. It's not even that scary. 52.
Okay, cool.
I was not scared by the trailers. I go, the clown thing. I get it. What have you got?
I'm a big baby, so I'm going to be scared by anything in the theater. But the real measure is if I'm thinking about it after. And this one, unless a clown walks up to me, which is not, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen. They're running around all over the place these days. Remember last year?
Yeah, that's right. There were clown sightings all around the Midwest.
If that happened to me, I wouldn't be talking so tough, but I'm saying I haven't been thinking about it since I saw it.
That'd be weird if you're driving down the road and there's just a guy standing in the bushes. He's a clown just hanging out on a dark bush.
I would want to die. That's the worst thing ever. When that was a viral story, that was scaring me.
That was pretty amazing.
Right.
Griff does something called the Vibe Score. He bounces some pop culture stories off of us. We like to score them. Amy's got some stories on the business side for you coming up next on WGN.